Namo Myoho Renge Kyo, thank you for being here. Thank you for your practice. I hope this finds you in good health and secure. We are continuing with the final chapter of this little book on the 3,000 realms. I hope you're enjoying it. Hope you're getting something out of it. In that regard, don't forget to like and subscribe. Not only to let me know, you know, how the videos are going, but mostly because of the algorithms of YouTube. This grows the sangha, right? So on number two here, we started with one, viewing the inconceivable objective, object, the idea, the concept, right? Number two, correctly arousing the mind of enlightenment. What does that mean? Makes me think of the way that we samsaric human beings, we go through our day like we're this hermetically sealed person, self, and everybody else and everything else is just, it's like a cloud of stuff around us. We're so incredibly self-centered. It's really hard to conceive. And if you've been practicing Buddhism for any amount of time or any philosophy that really looks at the nature of self, our perception of the universe, it's so self-centered. I don't want to get off on too much of a tangent, but correctly arousing the mind of enlightenment exactly confronts this. Because to arouse the mind of enlightenment, you first have to understand that what you are, what self is a constructed, confined experience. And that if you truly want to experience all of the energy that you're manifest of, then you have to permeate, break through that constructed shell that you've created around yourself, that ego, that I represent all things, because that's the assumption. And on paper, it's not that far from correct, but ideologically, the way that our mind works, it is completely shuts you down. Because to truly be all things, you must participate in the process of all things. Then you can truly say, I am all things. But the very fact that we have to use, you know, language is built this way. I, self, ego, is all about this shell, this protected identity. And it's scary. It's scary to then, if you're going to make that proposition, especially in language, and say, what would not be that? What would that not be? Well, then what linguistically it is, unprotected, which sounds scary. But this is why we don't use those words linguistically in Buddhism. We try to indicate that unmanufactured, unprotected, unconstructed self-ego as a liberation. That in actuality, what we are is participating in something far more vast and immense. And in order to express what we think of as a self, is that self only exists in juxtaposition to everything else. So rather than claim ownership of everything, to liberate oneself, to be within everything, an expression of one of the things that is everything, that changes the nature of our self-perception. Does that make sense? It's kind of like saying, imagine that you're an unborn chicken, and you exist in a shell, right? An eggshell. Very easy. You can take one out of the fridge. You can go hold one in your hand right now and understand what I'm talking about. The perception from inside that egg, even if that perception is so amazing that that perception understands that there's a lot going on outside that shell, the experience of that entity in the shell can say, I understand the universe. But it only understands the universe within the confines of that eggshell. No matter how linguistically clever that entity can be about existence, its idea of self is constructed, confined by that shell. Right? This is what we do. And when we break through that shell and we're then confronted with the immensity of everything no longer now outside, the shell simply disappears, the nature of our identity is confronted with the largesse in juxtaposition of a much greater whole. Now, here's the rub, is that as samsaric beings, even though we get rid of the shell, mentally, we hang on to it. We still parametize ourselves to say, I am a this, I act like this, I am, these are the things that I accept, that I don't accept. When you meet me, you will meet a this, a that, a this way, a that's way. You constantly are identifying your shell. It's no accident that in our young years, we talk about, you know, busting through our shell. Yeah, very literally. Some never do. Some think they do, but don't. We just construct new shells. So how can we reach enlightenment if we're describing enlightenment from within a protected shell? Do you see where I'm going with this now? Because the nature of enlightenment, real Buddhist enlightenment, has no shell, just as the universe has no edge. So to fully experience life, we can say your life, my life, but we're just localizing life, then we have to eschew shells. So to correctly arouse the mind of enlightenment is to prepare the mind to be shell-less. Let's see what he has to say. Second, truly and correctly arousing the resolve to attain the enlightened mind, the bodhicitta, means that based on the supreme reality, one arouses the uncreated four great bodhisattva vows, and with compassion for oneself and others, seeks enlightenment above and to save others below. Therefore, the Lotus Sutra, the Myoho Rengekyo, says, quote, a canopy was placed on the top of the vehicle as a shelter. Ooh, that's tricky language. But canopy is being used, like, what would be modern parlance would be an umbrella term, an embracing term, not a shell. Do you see why this could get confusing here? So I added a note in here. In this text, we see clearly Nietzsche's source for the insights of Gohonzon in the mental attainments of the focused samadhi or meditation. This is the secret truth kept and transmitted to the Miaolo, to Miaolo and Dengyo before Nichiren. The text continues. Then we get into skillfully pacifying the mind. This is step three. So remember, we're taking a step-to-step approach of, and this could all happen in an instant when we chant. We sit in front of our butsudan, we use our mandala as our focal point to penetrate that gohonzon, that ultimate window of experience, of totality. It can happen with one daimoku, or depending on how many distractions you're working through, might take several, yes? So this idea of a canopy is the idea of inclusion of knowing. Knowledge is no longer self-centered, but others-centered, along with, and it uses above, below here. I don't know how that translation works, but it's a visualization. We can understand from this that there's an overriding, over, above, riding principle here that by its nature is inclusive of one's environment, others, not just of identifying self, right? Number three, skillfully pacifying the mind. Why would you have to pacify the mind? Well, third, skillfully pacifying the mind through correct calming and contemplation means that by realizing the marvelous reality described previously, one is in the constant serenity that is called meditation. Once you break through that identification shell, the essence of your selfness, the perception of the freight train of karma instantiating moment to moment, one's self and environment together, once you have that perception, there's a great calming, right? Because the exigencies we constantly are struggling with, our anxieties and our stress, are about the dissonance between what we identify as self and our environment. But when we enter into the knowledge that there is no dissonance, that there is only experience of the totality, there is no separation, there is only concomitance, it's like a great weight lifted off of our minds, yes? And so that's calming and a result of our focus, contemplation. Being serene, there is constant illumination that is called wisdom. Therefore, the Myoho Rengekyo says, quote, a red pillow was placed in the vehicle, end quote. There's a calming, right? Like resting. Number four, destroying attachment. You see how all of these are minute descriptions of all the same process happening. Fourth, destroying attachment to all things means that based on the threefold contemplation, the Bodhisattva destroys the three delusions. There is no delusion that is not destroyed in a single moment of the threefold contemplation. Therefore, the Lotus Sutra says, quote, the vehicle is as swift as the wind, because it happens in an instant. When you finally let go of creating shells of identity, collections of identification, of self, of ego, when you're in the flow of energy that is the momentum of life, then the idea of possessions is moot. Right? When you're swimming in a pool of water, are you concerned about every cup of water that you're... Now I'm going through this many cups of water. Is that the cup of water that... Is that the mine? Is that water mine? You're not even thinking about that. You're just swimming through the water, right? Same thing. When we conceive of ourselves as identified, an I, an ego, then everything is either mine or not mine. It's all about possession. But it sounds silly to think, well, of course, when you swim across a pool or in the ocean or any body of water, the idea of mine is kind of silly, unless you're so egomaniacal that you own the ocean. You might. Samsara, pretty wild. Five, distinguishing the passageways and the obstructions. Certain things come to light when you transmigrate from that mind of possession and locality and identity to a broader sense of being. Fifth, distinguishing the passageways and obstructions means that suffering and the cause of suffering, the 12-fold causes and conditions of dependent origination, right, the nidana, the 6 hindrances, the innumerable delusions and fundamental ignorance are obstructions, right? All of that possessing and manipulation and shells, The path to nirvana and the cessation of suffering, the wisdom that extinguishes the causes and conditions, the 6 perfections, the 3-fold contemplation in a single moment of consciousness, yet another way to say 3,000 realms in a single thought moment, These are the passageways. These are the ways to get your mind to Buddhahood, recognizing these various literations, ideas, concepts. Whenever there are passageways, one should maintain them. Whenever there are obstructions, one should destroy them. When the passageway becomes an obstruction because of attachment to it, then that which destroys, like that which is destroyed, should be carefully sorted out and set in order section by section. This is called distinguishing the passageways and obstructions. The Myoho Rengekyo says, quote, a red pillow was placed outside the vehicle. Now that's an interesting, we're going to talk about that for a minute because that's, that could be confusing. I can remember thinking, there's a statement. I could remember thinking, you know, early on, there was a lot of talk amongst the people that I practiced with about, you know, what we do as Buddhists is get rid of desires. And then you hear these different, you know, from different schools, the koan, to desire not to desire, or that your desire to not desire becomes a desire, that whole mess. That, and we just addressed it in that last paragraph. And many of you, maybe all of you caught that. But it's an interesting, I think it bears some investigation because I've said several times in videos that, you know, we practice every day. We do gongyo. We chant. And there's an inherent danger in the way that our samsaric mind works, that we become, in a way, addicted to, how should I say this? We become passive participants in our own habits. I get out, the alarm clock went off, okay, and then brush my teeth and splash some water in my face. And before I get into my other rituals of whether it's shaving or doing my hair or makeup or whatever, I'm going to go chant for 15 minutes and race through Gongyo. And, that's just what I do, like getting the coffee maker going so I can have a cup of coffee in 10 minutes, you know. It's just another thing that I do every day. Okay, I'm done. Turn out the candles. Shut the boots on. Okay, now I can go get dressed. And it becomes, I guess the word would be rote. And it's still an activity. It's a commitment. I don't want to negate it entirely. However, and Nichiren repeats this constantly in various ways, attitude and intent, attitude and intent, attitude and intent. You know, I remember back in the 70s, maybe into the 80s, we'd write these little affirmations on pieces of paper and then tape them to the mirror in the bathroom or on the refrigerator in the kitchen, wherever we know we'd run into it. Remember that? That positive affirmation thing? It's almost like we need to do that with attitude and intent. You have to have a personal commitment, a resolve, an expectation when you perform Shodai, Daimoku, Gongyo. It's something that I've had to, I've talked to some of you who've come from, and a lot of people come through a certain organization that's all about, get as many in as you can, count them, do it for longer, blah, 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 blah. They're cheerleaders, and, maybe that started from a good place, that kind of thinking, but unfortunately, it rapidly devolves into a competition with others or with yourself. And I don't feel comfortable with the efficacy of that because it runs counter to what Nichiren is saying in Shakyamuni. In fact, Nichiren has said many times in his letters, as Shakyamuni has, that just one word or a four-word phrase or four gatha or any little bit of this teaching, the Lotus teachings, that you repeat to yourself, that you recite, is as though you have read the entire thing, as though you have inculcated the lessons of the entirety of the Lotus Sutra. This is what Nichiren built his doctrine on. This is why we chant Namu Myoho Renge Kyo. Namu is a critical set of characters that first of all presents ourself, our identity, our beingness, and Mu presents it as a dedicated, an open funnel for enlightenment to be received. I am present and I am awake and listening and receiving. Namu. And what are we awake for and receiving? The totality of enlightenment. Myoho-renge-kyo, this process of energy, the engine of life, and inculcating it into our ninth consciousness, yes? Buddhahood. If you have to write all of that down so that when you face your Butsudan and the mandala, you read that first and then you think, with each daimoku, I am expressing this engagement. Yes, there are words, there are sounds, there is rhythm, there is all of that, but it's all in the service of instantiating that. And when you chant with that kind of commitment, that kind of consciousness of what it is you are actually doing, I'm not going to stop you from chanting 2,000, 20,000, 200,000, 2 million daimoku. What I'm saying is, if you do just 10 daimoku with that kind of engagement, you are reaching the totality of enlightenment. You are, what was the word? Correctly arousing the mind of enlightenment. The second step. It's vital. It's absolutely critical that that is the way that you practice. This is the reason why when I'm asked, what should I be thinking, Sylvain? What should I be doing when I'm chanting? What should be going on in my mind? Just that. And I mean it. If you have to write down in whatever form a little letter or a paragraph to yourself before you start chanting, oh, this is should be my mindset. This is the way I should think about this. And then, Namu Myoho Renge Kyo, with that knowledge, with that preparation, right? Then, enlighten yourself. Not just a habit. And that's what these... The idea of these obstacles is that the desire to perform a procedure for enlightenment supersedes the actual act. And now it's a habit that you're doing that's just another habit. You don't have the investment that's required. That investment, that commitment, that confidence, that resolve. We're constantly talking about this, yeah? It's critical. We'll go a little bit further. And maybe I got ahead of myself here. Number six, integrating. Integrating the conditions for enlightenment. Sixth, coordinating the 37 conditions for enlightenment and adapting to them means to adjust to the 37 conditions for uncreated enlightenment one by one. And to enter into them, isn't that like entering a stream? When it is appropriate, the Lotus Sutra says, quote, there is a great white ox. The above five modes are for those of medium capacities. So, Tendai is identifying different levels of commitment and understanding, yeah? So his first five levels in this, of the ten, is the learning stage, the learning to understand and receive this experience that's not common to samsara, This is new. This is, I'm experiencing something now. This is the beginning of our practice. When you chant without knowing what's going to happen, but you have a great commitment due to curiosity, and things start to happen. The mandala does weird little visual things, but you're not sure what's going on. Your life, you see changes in your life, and wow, things are different. I can feel it, right? And then we settle into kind of a habit. And this is a dangerous period because we're very good at inculcating new experience. We just make it habit. Now I own that, right? Can't take it away, although you can lose it. Any of you who've quit practicing for a while know what I'm talking about. Right? Energy is energy. It has to stay in momentum. You have a basic momentum in your life. But by practicing Buddhism, you can alter that momentum, shift it. The momentum is moving. You can't change the speed of causality. But you can experience and shift your interplay with it and the cosmos, because your energy is within all energy. And so you can influence how it navigates the universe, what it runs into, what obstacles pop up, and what obstacles can now be just flowing with instead of resisting. And you can experience a kinder, better, more fulfilled life. That's what we're doing. Less suffering, less anxiety, more validation, if you will. More freedom to be. To be even more. To the maximum of our potential. That's what this is all about. But that seems a foreign experience when we first start. So everything ends up being about recognizing your attachments, recognizing when things become attachments. That's a new experience. Recognizing, I've made this a habit energy now. I'm not as invested. You must stay invested in the breaking through. So this is early. Now we're going to dig deeper into a more evolved practice, nurturing a greater understanding and experience of that being in the flow. Curing hindrances and assisting enlightenment is the seventh step. That's very proactive now. No, we're going to do something with this. We're not just going to discover it and go, this is cool. We're now going to understand with Buddha wisdom how to keep interacting with this newfound liberation and course as bodhisattvas in the world, in our life and others, right? No separation anymore. So we'll start on that in the next video. I think that's enough for today. And we're on number 7. Thanks for listening. I hope you're getting aha moments out of all of this. And maybe it's raising some questions for you. Again, please shout out in the comments or email me directly, right? And whatever it takes to keep your practice fresh. So I thank you. I thank you for participating. I thank you again for your practice, patrons for your support. All of you can support, like, subscribe, you know the drill. Right? Buy the ebooks, the print books. Everything helps to grow this Sangha and keep us alive. This is all I do. So it's not like I have a benefactor who gives me a place to do this, and she is amazing. Namo Myo Renge Kyo. Thank you, Sandra. But all of you, and your support by being here, by participating, And those of you who can, by supporting financially, let's propagate Nichiren's teachings, Shakyamuni's teachings. Let's change the world, yeah? Namo Myoho Renge Kyo. Thanks again. I will see you in the next one. Undoubtedly. Bye for now.